Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 24, Matsya, the Lord's Fish Incarnation, text number 4. Shri Sudhu Vacha,
Shri Sudhu Vacha,
Iti,
Iti,
Yukta,
Yukta,
Vishnu,
Vishnu,
Ratena,
Ratena,
Bhagavan,
Bhagavan,
Vatarayanatni,
Vatarayanatni,
Uvacha,
Uvacha,
Charitam,
Charitam,
Vishnu,
Vishnu,
Matsya,
Matsya,
Rupena. Sudha Goswami said, when Pariksha Maharaj thus inquired from Shukadeva Goswami, that most powerful saintly person began describing the pastimes of the Lord's incarnation as a fish. So text number 5. Shri Sudhu Vada, of the principles of the purpose of life.
Of the principles of the purpose of life.
Cha,
cha,
and
Eva,
Eva,
indeed,
he certainly.
Certainly.
Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, for the sake of protecting the cows, brahmanas, demigods, devotees, the Vedic literature, religious principles, and principles to fulfill the purpose of life, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the forms of incarnations. Purport. Oh, let's repeat that. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said,
Shri Shukadeva Goswami said,
O King,
O King,
for the sake of protecting the cows,
for the sake of protecting the cows,
brahmanas,
brahmanas,
demigods,
demigods,
devotees,
devotees,
the Vedic literature,
Vedic literature,
religious principles,
religious principles,
and principles to fulfill the purpose of life,
and principles to fulfill the purpose of life,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the forms of incarnation.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the forms of incarnations.
So how many? So what were the reasons why Krishna accepts the forms of incarnations? Anyone can name one of the reasons?
Protecting the cows.
Purpose of life. Raise your hand or else you won't be able to count. So the cows, yeah.
To protect the Brahmins.
Brahmins, yes.
Demigods.
The devotees.
The Vedic scriptures.
Vedic scriptures.
The purpose of life.
Yes. Anything else?
Religious principles.
Religious principles. Okay, I think we got them all there. Did anyone, someone mention the demigods?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Oh, we missed one.
Protection.
Chandasam.
The Vedic literatures.
Yes, the Vedic literatures.
You mentioned that. Yeah, I think I
said that.
Oh, okay. Dominic said
it. It's good to say it again. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in various types of incarnations to give protection to the cows and brahmanas. The Lord is described as Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha. In other words, He is always eager to benefit the cows and brahmanas. When Lord Krishna appeared, He purposely became a cowherd boy and showed personally how to give protection to the cows and calves. Similarly, he showed respect to Sudama Vipra, a real brahmana. From the Lord's personal activities, human society should learn how to give protection specifically to the brahmanas and cows. Then the protection of religious principles, fulfillment of the aim of life, and protection of Vedic knowledge can be achieved. Without protection of cows, Brahminical culture cannot be maintained. Without Brahminical culture, the aim of life cannot be fulfilled. The Lord therefore is described as Go Brahmanya Hitai because His incarnation is only for the protection of the cows and brahmanas. Unfortunately, because in Kali Yuga there is no protection of the cows in Brahminical culture, everything is in a precarious position. In human society, once we exalted, the leaders of society must follow the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and give protection to the cows, the brahmanas, and Brahminical culture. Shri Suta Guru, so the verse again. I'll just read the translation. Oh, the verse. Shri Shuku Vacha Govipra Sadunam Chandasam Mahi Chesaram Raksha Nichcham Tanordate Dharmasya Ratasya Chaivahi. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, for the sake of protecting the cows, brahmanas, demigods, devotees, the Vedic literature, religious principles, and principles to fulfill the purpose of life, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the forms of incarnations. Mama Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Pranamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Bhacharane Nirvishesha Shnivadi Paskagya De Siddharane. Nice to be here again. See so many devotees. So in this purport, what does it say is the very most essential thing to protect, the basic item on this list to protect?
Cows.
Yes, cows. What about the bulls? Cows and the bulls, yes. And if cows and bulls are protected, then what's possible to establish in society?
Brahminical culture.
Yes, Brahminical culture. So, often we don't really emphasize this very much in our Krishna consciousness movement, that the most basic principle is protection of cows. Now, our society is not really that expert at protecting cows. I remember one time in one place in America, one farm, they decided that they were going to become self-sufficient and they were only going to live off whatever the cows gave them. It was no very noble idea. Unfortunately, they had certain things on their list of necessities. It included everyone had to have a car, everyone had to have a video set, everyone had to go to India at least once a year, if not twice, and the cows had to maintain them. They found that 150 cows was not sufficient for their necessities, so they wound up with 300 cows. Unfortunately, the land wasn't big enough, and there was so the cows didn't cooperate because bulls kept on coming, and bulls didn't give any milk, so they were pretty useless for the maintenance. So by the end of their abandonment of self-sufficiency, when they concluded that this program of self-sufficiency doesn't work, that Prabhupada was somehow or another mistaken. He was idealistic in his program of self-sufficiency. Therefore, they had around 350 cows, and they abandoned the project. So, of course, maintaining the cows, protecting the cows, why is that the basic principle? Well, I don't really know myself why it's the basic principle, but one idea is that there are cows and you have to do something with them. So either you protect them or you abandon them or you kill them. Now, the idea of cows and bulls is that, Prabhupada said, I remember one time, the first time I ever went to New Vrindavan, which was in 1969, beginning of 1969, and Prabhupada had gone there to establish the first farm community in America. We didn't know anything. I mean, I didn't know anything about farms, but to speak of any ideas about farms. There were no cows on that farm, by the way, as far as I remember. Yeah, maybe there must have been something there because we got milk, but I didn't notice any cows. There was a lot of milk though. It could have come from the neighbor's farms. Because they, Kirtananda Swami at that time and Hari Grivi had just moved there and probably had just come for his first visit there. And the place was a disaster. I mean, I couldn't believe anyone would want to live there. We got off, at that time we only had dhotis and thongs. We didn't have shoes because we abandoned everything, including our shoes. And the whole place was just full of mud. Not the whole place was just full of mud, But the 2 miles he had to walk, because there was no road, it was just mud. And every step he took, he sank into the mud. So I was not very happy about walking 2 miles through mud. And then we got there, there was just like, there was one abandoned practically shack, which was the temple. It was actually the shack. That was the temple. Big shack. And we came up there, I was there with a devotee named Bhakti Bill at that time. Bhakti Bill later became Bhagavan Das. And his wife came, Irene. Irene became Krishna Bhamani. And I went up there with Bhakti Bill to see Srila Prabhupada, and he was up in his room. His room meant the attic. There was just enough room for his bed, and Prabhupada was sitting on his bed. And Bhakti Bill and myself, we went up there. And Prabhupada was just like glowing. And he looked at us and smiled and said, "So, how do you like our jungle?" And I was thinking, I don't know how long I'm going to be here. Because it was quite an austerity. There was no place to bathe. You went down to, I don't remember what they called it at that time, but you couldn't walk down the hill to go to the bathing ghat because it was all mud. You slid down the hill. And that was in the middle of the night. And of course, no one had a flashlight. So it was just like hit or miss. And after bathing in the mud, or then you walked up the mud, and you wondered why you bothered going down in the first place. And then Kirtananda, he came, Swami at that time, he came up to me because I was the treasurer of our little center in Buffalo. And he asked us, because it seemed that my friend, who I joined at about the same time, whose name was Bhakti, Jeffrey, he later on became Jagadish Prabhu. He was Jagadish Maharaj for a while, but then it was Jagadish Prabhu. He, as soon as they got there, they told him he was going to get second initiation. So I was really envious. I thought, my God, he only joined, you know, couple of weeks before I did. He got initiated a month before I did, but he was a, therefore he was a senior devotee compared to me. And Bhakti Bill was going to get initiated and married to Bhakti Narine. And there was another Madhavi, Labanga Latik, she was going to get second initiation too. And so they asked me to build a fire sacrifice, and they said, "My God, what is this? They're not giving me second initiation, and they're asking me to do all the work." But I said, "All right, I'll surrender," because I realized how envious I was. You know, second initiation back then was, you know, that was the top of the. I mean, there was one sannyasi, but no one really paid any attention to him. He never went anywhere. He just, he had actually gone to New Vrindavan to Bloop with Hari Griva. But when they were there, they decided not to Bloop. So no one paid any attention to. I mean, we knew about the sannyasi, but it wasn't really a big deal. It was a Brahmin. That was the, you know, that was practically you were as good as Krishna at that time. He was Brahmin. So I was very ambitious. I decided, well, if I can become a Brahmin, you know, practically Brahman already. So I built a fire sacrifice, and a devotee named Purushottam, who was Prabhupada's servant, came up to me and said, "Oh, you're going to get second initiation too." I said, it was worth the effort. But then I went to see Kirtananda. I went to, because Kirtananda wasn't living, he was living right next door, but in a really small, like a tent-like thing. And as soon as I got there, he said, "Oh, Prabhupada's program is, he said that if we simply get a cow and a little land, that all whole economic problem would be solved." I said, "This is really mysterious. What are they talking about? A cow?" Because I was the treasurer, and I'm trying to figure, if we got a cow and a little land, you know, our economic problems would be solved. I said, where are we going to put a cow in Buffalo? And so, and then Prabhupada at that time, he was going to give the initiation. So Kirtananda came up to me and said, which do you want, the $15 or the $10 feast? So I said, wow, I'm the treasurer. And I was trained up by the cheapest treasurers. Prabhupada trained up the treasurer to be really miserly. And it really fit my mentality. So I said, oh, of course, the $10 feast. I was thinking, well, maybe we could get the $5. But you couldn't imagine the $10 feast, it was like, there was so much sweet rice. And it wasn't, of course, it wasn't just for the devotees who got initiated, it was for the whole temple. It wasn't a big temple, there was maybe 5-6 devotees there. But they brought in gallons of sweet rice. I mean, that was what $10 bought you at that time. And I remember the devotees actually, after the initiation, they sat there and they ate sweet rice for hours. And everyone passed out on the floor. And the sweet rice was everywhere, it was all sticky. But everyone fell asleep on the sticky sweet rice. And I fell asleep on the sticky. And I didn't eat that much sweet rice, actually, compared to everyone else. But that was my introduction to Brahminical culture. The protection of the cows. And I don't know if it's really gone much beyond that. In any case, in Ayurveda, the milk is the most important food, although it has a bad reputation in modern society, mostly because it's pasteurized, and especially because it's homogenized. When milk is pasteurized and homogenized, especially homogenized, it becomes indigestible. Because, unless you have a furnace in your stomach, it becomes very difficult to digest. And it actually becomes toxic because it's indigestible. And when it's, especially when it's taken milk in the Veda culture, you had your cow there because you could take it right away. They didn't store things. They either made into yogurt and then later on turned the yogurt into butter, or they cooked it into milk right away. And you had the milk fresh within an hour. And milk fresh within an hour, you don't have to boil even. Because it's still fresh, right from the cow. It doesn't have all the bacteria that you're supposed to kill. And milk, according to Ayurveda, is the only food that immediately becomes the highest dhatu within a day. Most food, if you eat, it has to be transformed from, first it becomes rasa. Rasa means taste in Sanskrit. It also means mercury. It also means rasa, which means the first dhatu, which is, in the Western world, is the limb for the first product of digestion. Chyle, sometimes it's called. And when it's not digested, it turns into mucus. So the mucus that people get is a product of indigestion, of whatever that you're eating. If it doesn't get digested, it becomes mucus. But especially when people take milk products, a lot of times they get mucus, which means that they're not digesting it properly. And then from rasa, it becomes, through a biochemical process, it becomes blood, and from blood comes muscle, from muscle comes fat comes bone, from bone comes marrow, from marrow comes the reproductive fluids of both sexes. The whole reproductive system. And milk is the only, and from that comes ojas. Ojas is the basic principle of the subtle immunity. It's actually a substance, it's the glow that people have. That's how it's perceived. but it's an actual energy within the body which maintains both prana and tejas in the body. Prana and tejas is the essential energy. Prana is actually just a technical word for energy. And tejas is heat. So all the heat in the body, all the digestion, is all based upon the subtle manifesting itself as gross. Proper digestion, at least. So not only is a thought, because we have to digest thoughts. There's gross physical indigestion, and there's subtle indigestion. When you, if you can't stop thinking of something, it means you haven't digested it. Of course, Krishna is indigestible. So that's a different type of digestion. That's a good digestion, thinking about Krishna all the time. And actually thinking about Krishna all the time, one will actually be on a different platform of experience if one is in devotion. That digestion is spiritual. That will actually digest our material consciousness, thinking about Krishna. But digestion is subtly, on the mental platform, it digests thoughts, tejas. If it doesn't digest them and remove them or eliminate them by becoming aloof from them, then it stores them in a category by process of vata or prana, takes those thoughts and stores them into our memory, categorizes them. Pitta, tejas, or pitta, or tejas, or agni, they categorize the thoughts, they divide them up, and then the prana stores them in the ojas somewhere, on the subtle platform. On the subtle platform. Therefore, ojas is essential on the most subtle platform for just staying sane. If you don't have enough ojas, then tejas, because ojas is like the container by which prana and tejas are maintained on the subtle platform. If you don't have that, then you just go crazy. You can't. Your mind becomes uncontrolled. You can't remember anything. You can't forget things that you don't. The things that you want to forget, you can't. The things that you want to remember, you can't remember. And your body becomes cooler, the internal energy becomes cooler, therefore your digestive power goes down, you become more and more what's called vata. Vata becomes more and more disturbed, your mind becomes more and more agitated easily, you become angry much more easily, and then you become a normal, everyday person. And then you believe that all these simple activities are the basis of life, because that's how you become happy, and controlling your senses is abominable, it's only for some primitive people. So then you actually have that conviction, because you have no brains left. And on the more gross platform, tejas helps us digest thought, sight. When we look around in order to see things, how we see things, depends mostly upon our tejas internally, how we're analyzing things, what our memory is. But also even to see anything requires tejas, because we have to digest the wavelength, the light, in order to see. And then on the gross platform, of course, we're more familiar with the digestive process. You eat something, you hope that somehow or another it gets digested. Which a lot of times, people have no idea how anything works in this material world. The most important thing is how they work. We were doing Harinam in Christ Church, and I was sitting there, I saw someone walking by with his whole lunch, eating it on the way, wherever he was going. I was thinking that people have no idea what they're doing. It's hard enough to sit down and eat and actually concentrate on what you're doing. What to speak of walking to wherever you're going and eating. What to speak of chewing anything. So, by tejas, we can able to jata agni is one of the fires in the body which digests food, supposedly. Helps to digest food, but all there is fires on every level. Every dhatu, every level from blood to muscle to bone to fat to sukra, everything requires tejas, everything requires fire, some manifestation of fire to convert one thing to the next. So you eliminate the sukra, you eliminate anything along the way, rasa or anything, then nothing further is developed. Everything goes down, because if you don't digest something, then it turns into what's modernly known as toxins. And toxins, they block everything. Every metabolical pathway, they block. And then you become more and more bewildered, more and more lethargic, more and more whatever. All the different things that support you, your bones, your muscles, your brain, everything just deteriorates. And then you make progress, getting older and older. So now you're 13 years old, people are practically ready for retirement. They've already used up the best years of their life. They've experienced everything, ready for retirement. But the miracle, one of the rare foods that can actually change if you can digest it, is that milk goes in within one day from milk into the ojas. Everything else takes at least 32 days on an average to go from rasa to rakta. These are the Sanskrit names for rasa, blood, to muscle, to fat, to bones, to marrow, to the reproductive fluids. Everything else takes at least 32 days. I'm sure in modern culture, modern society, nothing lasts. It doesn't get that far. People are, well, they're so uncontrolled, I'm sure, by their illicit sex, by their meat eating, gambling, mental speculation, and intoxication, because these things burn up ojas. Anxiety itself burns up ojas. But to speak of illicit sex, that is like a major factor. So all these things like AIDS that people are complaining about, that AIDS is actually a grouping of around 20, when I was doing studies on it, it's around, it was 24 different diseases they categorized together, they put it together. It wasn't for sake of convenience, it was for the sake of getting money. Because if people actually understood what it was all about, they wouldn't have given any money for it. That it was just the ordinary diseases that have been going on since they've been recording diseases, and they just grouped them all together and they call it autoimmune diseases. So it included everything, from carpus sarcosi to from hepophilia. They put everything together as AIDS and made everyone scared about it so much that there were more people researching AIDS at one time than people who had AIDS. So they got a lot. And then autoimmune diseases started to go down, so they added a few more diseases to kind of bring the number up so they could keep people scared and keep the money coming in, which is the most important thing about their research. Keep the money coming in. But the major factor of AIDS was just like carpus sarcosi, which is a skin cancer. They found it mostly among homosexuals, and they were claiming it came from sexual transmission or something. But actually, there are other cofactors, like some of the homosexuals who are having sex five times a day seem to have come down with it, this autoimmune disease. They couldn't figure out why. But according to Ayurveda, the reason why is because if you use up ojas, which is a good way of using up ojas, then you have nothing left. You only have left is the disease process to set in, because you can't digest anything, thoughts, therefore you don't know what to do, what not to do, when to do it, when not to do it. You have no brains left to know what to do. You're just in a vicious cycle of sense gratification. And therefore, if you do eat anything besides just taking drugs, it just turns into toxins, and eventually it comes up to the level of disease where it manifests itself as cancer or some other disease. And then you blame it on something and try to get money for it, to cure it, get an injection. Is this some injections going to cure, you know, the fact that you've already depleted all your energy from your body? So they're going to give you some injection from some dead person who had AIDS. They'll inject something into you and that will cure you. Needless to say, somehow or another, they haven't found the cure yet. The cure is to stop illicit sex. Cure is to learn how to eat properly. The cure would be to actually, as ultimately, why are the people absorbed in these things? Because they're absorbed in the wrong mentality. They're completely absorbed in this trying to lord it over material nature and control it and enjoy it. And why is that mentality fostered? Well, one of the reasons, the principal reason, is because they don't like their mothers. There are many mothers. They don't get along with their mother. One of the mothers is the cow. Now, I think, I don't know what the statistics are nowadays, but I don't think they breastfeed children that much. There's no real bond. You don't get anything from your mother except a good slap sometimes. That they downplayed so many things. That, you know, the mother's, oh, this is not very good for you, you know. You shouldn't breastfeed your child. It'll cause him so many psychological problems and he'll become very unhealthy. That God has made everything very, you know, strangely. That it was finally we came along, we figured out how all the things God did wrong. And we came up with a formula which beats God's out by millions of times. So surrender to us and everything will be all right. So they made up all these things of soy milk or whatever, you know, artificial things, and this was supposed to be, you know, this will make super children. Unfortunately, they were wrong. Instead of super children, it made stupid children. And therefore, you know, they're not being breastfed. All the immune system that the mother has, which was supposed, passive immunity, which was supposed to be given at the time of, by breastfeeding, was just like not given to the child. And they came up with this idea, well, we have a substitute. We'll give them all these inoculations. Of course, you know, many of the children die from the inoculations, but, you know, we don't talk about them because it's, you know, it's not very good. It's bad for business. What to speak of the fact that if you understand what inoculations are. They were made from infecting a calf, usually, cutting the calf open when it was alive, infecting it, and the drippings that came out of the calf, that they turned those into inoculations. But that's science. It's like, you know. So many things go on like that. Fluoride, for instance. I don't know if they use fluoride in the water here.
It's the
only
capital city in Australia which doesn't have it yet.
Oh.
But they're
kind of
in the bottled water.
In the bottled water. Yeah, fluoride was because the aluminum companies, they were, as a byproduct of aluminum, they got aluminum sulfate. I guess you know all about that. And how they couldn't figure out what to use with the byproduct, so they decided to put it into the water. And then charge people for it. So they did a study in America where they, in one place, they put the fluoride into the water and they cheated as normal. They put their own doctors and paid them off and they came up with their own results, which were completely fabricated to prove that fluoride actually improved the teeth. Actually, it destroyed the children's teeth in the place where they did it, but it was just cheating. And even they know it's cheating, but because the government is just all paid off, that's all, by these, they're all just put into their office by the pharmaceutical companies, etc. They're making all the money, they just buy them. Therefore, even people know it, but still, they just put more and more into it. So, not surprising, the companies that making formulas, because that's how modern medicine came about, is that herbal medicine was too cheap. People could just grow their own herbs, no one could make any money. And the big companies like Carnegie's, the Carnegie Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, they did investigations to try and figure out how to make money out of medicine, because that's where you make a lot of medicine, of money. So they figured out the best thing to do is make artificial medicine. And then, so they did that. They started the pharmaceutical companies, taking the same ingredients from the herbs and just kind of distilling what they thought was the essence. And then they paid off, they created all these schools for medicine. And then they brought all these politicians into office and passed laws against herbs. So it became illegal to grow herbs, to prescribe herbs. And therefore, people had no alternative but to go to the allopathic doctors, and they got trained up through publicity and through the laws and everything else that this is your medicine. Never in mind, it kills people. Illotropic medicine means, illotropic means that 30 to 40% of all people taking medicine is a result of taking other medicine. So medicine is a good business, because the more you take of it, the more you got to take of it.
Iotropic.
It's a very good business, because it doesn't cure anything; it just kills people. But the more you get it, then the more symptoms you have. If you read the bottles, it says this will turn your hair green, but most people don't care. They wouldn't mind if the hair is green. Your teeth will fall out. Well, they're falling out anyhow. And your liver will dissolve. But this will cure your disease. So people take it because they can't read anymore. They don't have it. It's too small print anyhow. They've lost their eyesight. You have a magnifying glass to read it. And so they take the medicine. Lo and behold, they get the side effects, and they have to go back to the doctor, and the doctor sends them to another specialist who gives them another medicine, cures that, or covers over the symptoms. And then, next thing you know, you get another disease. Lo and behold, symptoms are covered over by the mercy of God. The disease process gets deeper into the body, and you get more symptoms, and then you go and get more and more until you die. No one understands why. Some vicious germ hit you. You're walking down the street, someone sneezed on you, and it was all over. It has nothing to do with your lifestyle or your mentality or anything. It just so happened you were in the wrong place at the wrong time. So the point is that people don't know how things are actually working. And because they don't realize that in a simple life where people actually have a village, or where they're growing their own food and getting milk from a cow, their mentality is much different. Because milk is the one food which is given out of love. Can anyone name another food besides milk which is given out of love?
Popos?
What's that?
Purple?
What's that?
Fruits.
You mean the tree loves you? You have some special relationship with the tree?
Isn't it that when you eat a fruit, you distribute the seeds? I mean, because what is the value of a fruit to a plant? Isn't it like the birds and the bats eat the fruits and they distribute the seeds? So that's why.
Out of love?
Wow.
That's a broader definition of love than what we're talking about. some personal relationship between one person and the other. The bats are not eating the fruit out of love, nor is the tree giving the fruit to the bats out of love. Oh, my dear bat, please come and kiss my fruits. It has nothing to do with any personal relationship. The milk is given by the mother to the child in every species, it's out of love. There's an affection there. That's why the blood is turned into milk out of affection. Therefore, when one drinks it, one actually develops a loving mentality, an affectionate mentality, even from the material point of view. And if you drink the blood of the cow, it's a completely different mentality. It just increases one's desire to drink more blood. Dracula is not noted for his loving relationship. Let me kiss you, my dear, on the throat. I'm in love with you. Let me kiss you, little bite. So it develops a Dracula mentality instead of a more of eternal mentality, loving mentality. And therefore, you know, the whole society mentality from the very beginning is wrong, and it goes on being wrong. And then they have so many milk, even the milk products that they give people generally, they can't digest, and then they blame it all on the cow or on the milk. Now, of course, in a society where people understand what the values of life are, that the whole value is become Krishna conscious and they can actually get pleasure from it, that there is an actual spiritual energy which is pleasureful, then people try to become God conscious. And God conscious means you don't need cars, you don't need computers, you don't need 99.9% of the things that modern society is producing to become God conscious. You only need to maintain the body, and to maintain the body you just need a little land and a cow. But because people are not God conscious, they've invented so many things for their amusement. Their amusement is mostly all concerned with eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. They take that as their amusement. And they want to do that 24 hours a day. So their video games are mostly about killing things. They're cartoons for the children. Mostly you see, you know, something Roadrunner, whatever his name is, and someone comes along with a hammer and smashes the guy in the head. That's the amusement for the kids. And then somehow or another, out of being smashed on the head, pulverized into nothing, it just pops back in. So the message is, the children are, you can smash anything and it'll just pop back into being, miraculously. And you get a lot of fun out of smashing things. And after watching enough of this and trying it out with all the grasshoppers in the block, they wonder why the children aren't, you know, nice behaved children. They can't figure it out. You give them every toy, every machine gun that's come out, every video game. You can sit at home, my child has everything, you can sit at home and kill whole civilizations in his computer game. And we don't mind it that with every video game there's a connection on the internet to, you know, pornography, because he's already 10 years old, he should know about these things. He should get, you know, education, he shouldn't be surprised about anything. And then they can't understand what's going on. You know, that's doctor, you know, so-and-so said it was the best thing for my kid. It's good enough for me, why shouldn't it be good for the kid? So people don't appreciate plain living because they have no taste, they have no capacity to experience anything spiritual. Their consciousness is so covered over, they can't even understand that they're not their body. The most obvious thing, the most direct thing in our experience, the fact that our body is always changing, who could deny it? And who in their right mind would say that they're a different person? If you're a different person at every moment, then why should I bother speaking to you? I have to keep on repeating the same thing over and over, because there's a different person in the body, and you'd be changing. One moment you'd believe, the next, hey, that sounds good. Hey, no, I'm sorry, different person. Don't understand the thing you're talking about. You'd have to go be in the first grade forever, trying to relearn everything. Now, everyone knows that they're the same person inside, but it's a different personality. It's very subtle. Different personality, different mentality, different body. Everything in one sense is different except for ourselves. So we can't even understand that. We're so dull. What to speak of anything which is a little bit more subtle? Like there's a God behind the creation. you know, things haven't come about by accident. Things that should be quite obvious to any sane person. So we can understand that people are quite dull in modern society. And not only they're dull, but we're also being brought up in the same culture. We've been educated in a very dull way, in a very misdirected way, and we're not necessarily, we weren't given the subtle bodies, which were the brightest, to understand even these really important things, like the difference between ourselves and the body. Because otherwise we'd be joyful all the time. Nothing would affect us. We'd be in ecstasy all the time, at least joyful, undisturbed by any material circumstance. Just like no one is in anxiety because last night, you know, a car ran over me in the dream. No, we just take it as a dream. So one who's awake to spiritual knowledge, he takes this world as a dream, in the sense that it's temporary, it has nothing to do with us. Not that we don't utilize this body for Krishna, but as an instrument for Krishna. Therefore, we take care of it nicely for Krishna. But people can't even begin to understand that. They can't understand what's actually the process of becoming, developing a loving attitude. They talk about love, but there's no question of love if you're killing animals. There's no question of love if you're intoxicated all the time. There's no question of love if you're engaged in illicit sex, which is just based upon lust and exploitation. There's no question of love if you're always speculating, gambling to get something you don't deserve. There's no question of love for God, for anyone, for anything. There's only a question of love for trying to figure out how to avoid mostly all the problems that are being put before us at every moment, how to avoid suffering any more than we're already suffering. And if we can get out of suffering for a few moments enough to so-called try to enjoy, then the enjoyment is turn on television and watch people smash into each other on television. Because at least they're not smashing into you, so you feel good. Finally, I see people in worse shape than I am. I'm getting smashed into, but at least by not these guys. So it's quite a crazy situation. So the point is that although it may seem rather far away, the cow, what does it have to do with us? What does Brahmins have to do with us? You know, why should people be so much concerned with protecting Brahmins? But unless people understand what the actual goal of life is, that there's something spiritual, we can actually experience spiritual energy, which is actual pleasure, pure pleasure, which always increases, and takes away our tendency to all these artificial, temporary, so-called happiness in the material world. Unless we can understand there's a science behind it, which is understood by persons in the mode of goodness, we can actually direct us how to live in such a way as to make progress. Unless these things are taken as something valuable. And first of all, by experience. That if there are Brahmins who properly live, and probably if he mentions here, we should actually be a little concerned about cow protection. Not that we're the Hare Krishna movement, we have prasadam. We get enough milk anyhow. We don't, you know, what do we care? No, there should be some interest in cow protection, some interest in actually establishing vana and ashram, including the Brahminical culture, so that we ourselves can understand what is the actual spiritual science. We can become Krishna conscious. It's not apart from our efforts to become Krishna conscious. Although preaching is the most important thing, because by preaching we should get enough brains. By practicing chanting Hare Krishna, following the principles and preaching, we should get enough brains to understand the value of vanashram and therefore be able to properly establish it. Because unless we can understand the value of vanashram, we won't understand why we should do it. We'll be in the same position again as the devotees who thought the cows are supposed to buy our videos and our trips to India and our cars and everything else. We think that's the purpose of the cows. That's self-sufficiency. Unless we can get a higher taste by chanting Hare Krishna and hearing about Krishna, actually feel Krishna's presence in his mood of ecstasy, and actually feel that ecstasy which will cleanse away our heart, our contamination of our hearts, and therefore learn how to get constantly that transcendental happiness, ever increasing, then we want to understand how to live here simply, that there is transcendental pleasure which doesn't depend upon all these modern things. So Prabhupada wanted us, first of all, to utilize all these modern things in preaching. Because if we utilize them in preaching, then we'll understand, you know, what's their value to help us remember Krishna. And if we don't, then they just become a burden for us, and they become a, you know, we won't understand anything about the value of, we won't understand the difference between ourselves and this body, what to speak of developing more and more conviction that Krishna is God, more and more experience of it, more and more understanding of how everything fits together, whether it be Gurukul or Vanashram. It's not the Prahlad Maharaj, who's, you know, some old Indian from the past. I don't even know if Prahlad Maharaj was Indian, but I guess, you know. But he was some, you know, now is the modern time, we don't listen to these old scriptures, you know, brought by this Indian who just didn't understand modern psychology and modern society. Prahlad Maharaj, when he said that we should establish Gurukuls, you know, he didn't realize how much child abuse there'd be. But he had plenty of experience with child abuse. He was always being abused by his father. But still, he didn't give up, and his teachers were also child abusers. But he didn't give up his conviction in the value of Gurukul. But he didn't want a Gurukul where, you know, like Hiranyakashipu was running, a Marcus. He wanted a real Gurukul, where people, where the children would actually be trained up in devotional service and Krishna consciousness. Krishna was a farmer. And believe it or not, he's still a farmer. He didn't graduate, you know. I'm sick of these cows, you know. Finally got a chance to move to Dwarka. No, he's still in Vrindavan. He's still herding the cows. Even right now, he might be in the fields herding the cows. He might be milking the cows. So if it's good enough for Krishna, it should be good enough for us. Not that, my God, I'm going to go to the spiritual world and I might be a cow. I don't want to be a cow. I may be out in the field, you know, I may be this cowboy. I'm just herding the cows all day long, or having to milk them. Whatever, but Krishna's, they're all quite happy. It's all love. The whole mood is transcendental happiness. It's just not everyone sharing the transcendental bliss that everyone's experiencing there through the simple activities that are going on there. Dancing, chanting, feasting on the prasadam, especially the milk coming from the cows. And the milks are giving, cows are giving oceans of milk out of love for Krishna. Therefore, we should try to fit it all together and not become bewildered thinking that, you know, the holy name is good and the cows are bad, or, you know, how, who should get their hands dirty and milking these cows and, you know, etc. We don't drink milk because it's unhealthy, according to the, whatever. So many material ideas. So we should understand these things properly, try to apply them the best we can. Then our chanting will improve, actually. Even just by understanding things more clearly, we'll have conviction that these books are not some old books that don't really apply anymore, that we're in the modern society. Scientists have actually gone way beyond this with the computers and the spaceships and the airplanes and whatever else they have, all this technology. Actually, we'll realize that this is the problem that people have. And unless they utilize this technology in Krishna service, because they won't give it up any otherwise, they won't realize what is the uselessness of this technology. How it doesn't bring about any real permanent happiness, just makes everything more complicated. So Prabhupada wanted them to utilize, all of us to utilize this technology in Krishna service, and the result will be is that we should become more simple, and we should become able to live on a farm and grow our own food and protect the cows, and then be happy chanting Hare Krishna, hearing about Krishna with all the extra time we have. We won't wonder, well, we've got so much extra time, so simple life, what's on television? I'm here and the football game's going on, and there's no television. quick, go to the city, you know. Get a television. I'm bored out here. I'm just listening to the crickets all day. You know, where's Led Zeppelin or something? Oh, I know some devotees have gone out to farms and they can't sleep at night. Not because there's too much noise, because there's no noise. They can't, it's too quiet out there. They need some noise to sleep. So it takes a little while to adopt. So we'll stop there, thank you. Any questions? Yes. Well, they started to get killed off way before that.
Well, that was the beginning when I was starting to develop medicines. And they're doing all the...
Well, I'm sure they declared everyone a witch. Mm. Anyone who had any healing powers was declared a witch. Because there were many bogus people, too. But then, at that time, I mean, they were all bogus. All these pharmaceutical things, they came along and they had rattlesnake poison for cure all diseases and... And all of a sudden, there was no standard, because even at that time, they were coming from the Western world, from Europe mostly. They all had the perfect qualifications to get cheated, even there. But generally, they had some knowledge. They knew how to grow some herbal medicine. Even some of our grandmothers may have known something about that. So it was either they were called medicine men, or wasn't that they were. They just made propaganda against them. You know, don't listen to your grandmother. You know, read the newspapers. They don't know what they're doing. They're old fogies. And then they, just by the whole economic system where everyone had to go to work, even the children were going to work at that time. There was no time to cook. And like in modern society. Of course, the ladies used to stay at home at that time. It was joint families, so they had the old grandmothers there and grandfathers. But as they tried to get more and more into putting the old people away, then all the knowledge that they had, all the experience they had, kind of disappeared. And the only thing you had to rely upon was what was in the newspapers or on the internet. And since you didn't have any authority besides that, you had to accept whatever they said. And they could say any damn thing to make money, to sell it to you. So how exactly went on, you know, the process? It was a gradual process. But now we're reaching the culmination, the siddhanta of the whole process, conclusion.
The Christians killed a lot of witches in the middle Renaissance period, Middle Ages, because they thought they were responsible for any catastrophe or bad thing that happened.
So now we kill more than just witches, we kill whole countries.
Yeah.
You know, you label a country terrorist, and you go over, you wipe it out, and there's no more problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're all peaceful there. Mm-hmm. Not a blade of grass is moving. No, now it's not like, oh, these barbaric, you know, previously they used to have things like religious intolerance, and now everything has become much more peaceful and much more, it's much worse now. Just that we're false propaganda through the newspapers, we say it's better. Now we don't kill, you know, just through killing a few people in a war, we kill, what was that, how many millions of children are killed every year by abortion? In India, it's even, well, they kill so many, I don't even know what the statistics are. There's millions and 50 million a year or something. So if you read in the newspaper, you know, 50 million people killed, what would you think?
Holocaust.
Yeah, that's...
Well, last week, the Australian Parliament passed a bill allowing stem cell research to grow embryos artificially and then use the cells to try and make medicines for different diseases.
Combine two great flavors that taste pretty good.
So there's a Holocaust going on, much worse than ever before, and it's increasing. And we're thinking, oh, it's progress. People are, no, it's actually much worse now than it ever was. The air is much more contaminated, the water is more contaminated, people's minds are more contaminated. Everything is much worse. Therefore, soon, if you're 20 years old, you'll be considered a ripe old man or woman. You'll be ready for retirement by the time you're 10. Ladies will have children by the time they're 7 or 8 years old. So that time is coming. No, only it's... And the way it's going, unless the Hare Krishna movement, unless Lord Chaitanya spreads the movement, you know, then it's coming quite rapidly. Of course, there's a few things along the way, like they have this global warming. When I was in New Zealand, people are flying over to watch the icebergs floating by New Zealand. Some of them the size of cities. You know, people landing on the icebergs. They're all fun, you know. Entertainment makes money. Unfortunately, when the icebergs, as they're melting, it seems every year they come up with their melting quicker than they thought. Here in Antarctica and Greenland, then the sea levels they predict, according to their prediction, will rise, what was that, 6 meters? 8 meters. 8 meters, 24 feet, so New York City will become an aquarium. And I guess Sydney and places like that, Brisbane, you know, you can do underwater sightseeing. So progress. So we don't want to take any more of your time. Thank you very much. Kanjarai, Shrimad Bhagavatam, Jai.
Holiness Pralananda Swami.
Jai.